Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, our general topic, I guess we could say, is indoor air quality, but more specifically, we're going to be discussing the health effects of secondhand smoke and e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes and the use of them is sometimes referred to as vaping. Our guests are Marge Stoneking. She's the director of the American Lung Association for Alaska, and Emily Ninon. She is the government relations director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. You can reach us during the next 55 minutes or so with questions and comments. If you live in Anchorage, our number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And as usual, you can email during the next 55 minutes or so at line1@alaskapublic.org. Emily, welcome. This is your first time here, I think.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. And Marge, welcome back. You've been here almost as much as me. No, not quite that much.
Thank you, Dr.
Several times. Good to see you here. So let's start by just learning about what each of your organizations work with or do. Emily, what's the purpose of the Cancer Action Network?
The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network is the advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. So the American Cancer Society mission summed up is to help people get well and stay well. So we are working towards eliminating cancer as a major health problem in the United States and making progress toward that goal. One of the big pieces of that is public policy, and that's where the Cancer Action Network comes in. And my work for the last 13 years with this organization has been to work on policy change here in Alaska.
Okay. And Marge, how about the Lung Association?
Well, the Lung Association is about saving lives by preventing lung disease and improving lung health. And we do that by fighting for healthy air, both indoors and out, by helping to keep people off tobacco and supporting people with lung diseases.
So I would have to say that one of the greatest challenges, public health challenges, probably in the last 25 to 50 years has been cigarette smoking.
Yes.
And it would appear that that effort has some very good evidence of success. I'm always careful in the words I'm picking. Do you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
In fact, the Surgeon General just put out a report on the 50th anniversary of the first Surgeon General report on the health effects of smoking.
And I'm also going to guess, I'm a little less sure on this, but if we were to ask the question, what is the principal air pollution source for indoor air, it's still going to be cigarette smoke, though.
Right. So if you don't have smoking in your home, obviously there's other things to look for. And the number one thing you can do is to take your shoes off at the door.
Right.
But you have a whole lot more going on if you have someone smoking in your home.
Right. So there is fairly good evidence that secondhand smoke is still a problem.
Absolutely. I think since the Surgeon General report of 2006 that's the most recent report on the consequences of involuntary smoking or secondhand smoke effects, it's pretty much a settled debate. I don't think there are a whole lot of folks out there who are going to argue that this is a safe practice anymore, that secondhand smoke poses no danger, particularly to children. That's an open and closed book.
What connotes or how would we describe or define secondhand smoke? Are we just talking about cigarette smoke? Are we talking about wood stoves or cigars or pipes or what do we mean?
In our common practice, we're talking, when we hear the phrase secondhand smoke, we are talking about what's coming from tobacco products, so cigarettes, cigars, pipes.
And secondhand smoke's made up of side stream smoke that comes off the burning cigarette as well as exhaled smoke coming, you know, back out of the smoker themselves. And that it is by far the biggest problem when you think about smoke like wood smoke and whatnot in an indoor setting.
And so even if you're not smoking the cigarette or other tobacco instrument, there is still some risk for individuals that are associated with that. And a lot of people might ask, well, how can you measure that? And there are byproducts that you can tell whether people have had exposure to smoking.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most common biological marker measured is cotinine, which is what nicotine transforms into in the bloodstream. And so, people are usually measured as non-smokers, maybe a never smoker, a former smoker, or a current smoker, and then their exposure to cotinine is a direct effect of secondhand smoke.
Yeah, that's something that always you wonder about how you can tell whether somebody's really had exposure to secondhand smoke. And I don't know off the top of my head how long that product's available, but or that cotinine is available to be measured in the bloodstream. But it is a marker, so we know it's very specific for having had exposure to cigarette smoke. So then you could make studies based on how much cotinine is present in people's blood and particular illnesses that they may have acquired.
Mm-hmm. I think the most studies have been done on non-smoking spouses of smokers.
Okay.
Because they get the most exposure,
right.
As well as folks in a workplace because they have the most concentrated exposure. So you have length of time and concentration of exposure. And what they've found with those spouses of smokers is that their risk of lung cancer and their risk of heart disease is raised by 20% over a non-smoker who's not in such a exposure setting.
Mm-hmm. Which gets to some of the legislation about indoor smoking. Whether you're smoking or not, it's not, in a sense, your rights that should be considered. It's, in a sense, the rights of others who are being exposed. Is that part of the argument?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, part of the cultural change that's been happening in this country has been moving from a smoking culture to a non-smoking culture. And as we do that, it's become less acceptable to define yourself as having a smoker's right to harm someone else. But we still face that argument, certainly in some venues. I think one of the biggest things that we know now about secondhand smoke is related to cardiovascular health.
So the most recent Surgeon General's report that came out just in January, really interesting, looking at adding some new diseases to and new cancers in particular to the list of cancers that are known to be caused by smoking, but also added stroke to the list of diseases known to be caused by secondhand smoke. Heart disease was already on that list, and we now know, according to that report, that the risk of stroke from exposure to secondhand smoke increases by 20 to 30% with that exposure.
Incidence or risk of stroke.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And what we've also seen around the country, interesting when you look at the policy issue, is a number of places that have passed smoke-free laws have seen drops in hospital admissions for heart attacks in those communities. And even in some communities where there's been a policy in place for a period of time and then the policy went away for some reason for a length of time. This happened in first in Helena, Montana, also in Pueblo, Colorado. They measured these changes and were able to see that heart attack admissions went down during the period when smoke-free workplaces was in place and went back up when smoking started being allowed in the workplace again. These studies have been replicated now all over the world, and it's really, really striking, even for somebody like myself that's been working on this for a number of years, to see that dramatic drop in heart attack admissions when smoke-free workplace policies go into place.
Let me remind the listeners once again, you're listening to Line One, your health connection from KSK Anchorage. Our topic today is indoor air quality, but very specifically, we're talking about the health effects of secondhand smoke. What we're trying to do, what I'd like to do, is spend a lot of the first part of the program on secondhand smoke, and then we're going to address e-cigarettes in the second half of the program. Marge Stone King, the director of the American Lung Association, was with us in the studio, and along with her is Emily Ninon, who is the government relations director of the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. If you've got questions or comments about either of these issues, secondhand smoke or e-cigarettes, you can reach us at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1, which you have to spell out, all one word, at alaskapublic.org. So, Emily, what's happened with, let's just stick to lung cancer rates and relate that to what we know about the incidence of smoking?
Well, there's good news to report overall, with cancer deaths having dropped over the cancer death rates have dropped over the since the in about the last 25 years, we've gone from 1 in 3 people surviving cancer to 2 out of 3 people surviving a cancer diagnosis. We're working to make that 3 out of 3 people surviving cancer. And addressing secondhand smoke and tobacco use is one of the ways we're dealing with that.
What about the number of new cases of lung cancer? My understanding is that may be decreasing in men, corresponding with decreased smoking, but still kind of delay, still a problem in women who kind of got into the action with the cigarette smoking maybe a little later is part of the explanation for that. And there is a lag time between the onset and smoking, which makes sometimes this evidence a little harder to wean out.
Right. So since they started measuring or keeping track of lung cancer rates, the incidence of lung cancer among men, so from 1975 to now, has decreased by a quarter. But the incidence of lung cancer among women has actually doubled during that same time. And certainly that's one of the theories, is that the tobacco industry targeted women in their campaign to create new smokers later. But of course, smoking is only one of the risk factors for lung cancer. Secondhand smoke is certainly one of the risk factors as well.
Another thing that's interesting with this latest Surgeon General's report that just came out in January, and the reflection back to the first report linking smoking and cancer 50 years ago in 1964, researchers have found that the chemicals in cigarettes have actually changed over the years, and the cigarettes themselves are more dangerous than they were 50 years ago. Smokers are 2 to 3 times more likely to die from smoking-related illness than they were 50 years ago. That's double the risk for men and 3 times the risk for women.
Which really raises the question, since we're going to talk about e-cigarettes in a minute, and their content is different than a typical cigarette. So what is in a cigarette?
Wow. I mean, there's more than 7,000 chemicals in a cigarette, and dozens of them have been specifically identified as carcinogens.
So 69.
Yeah. So besides nicotine being, of course, the psychoactive drug within cigarettes, that is also the addictive piece, there are all these chemicals that go along with it.
All right.
And the other thing is that when you burn anything, then you're putting out particulate matter. Mm-hmm. And particulate matter is a risk for lung cancer,
right,
as well as heart disease and stroke.
Right. By particulate matter, you mean?
So that's a term we use when we talk about air pollution, and it's a term you'll hear the EPA talking about in outdoor air pollution, and it's related to the size of the particle. And when you get into smaller particles, fine particles, so as opposed to dust or something larger, something you can see, right? Fine particulates or ultrafine particulates are a fraction of the width or the diameter of a human hair, and they bypass the natural protective defenses of the body and therefore get deep into your lungs and get lodged there,
right,
which is a huge risk for lung cancer in particular.
Yeah. So the upper respiratory tract, your nose, is not sitting there just to smell. It cleans and humidifies and warms the air you breathe. And what you're saying is some particulates are so small we can't see them. They're also so small that they bypass that cleaning mechanism of the upper airway and end up impacting down in the lung, where they got to go somewhere. And we have special cells that are designed to kind of pick up those things and remove them, but they can get injured by the toxins in those things and increase the risk of lung cancer when you see these various of certain kinds of cancers and illnesses like emphysema. And so when you see some of these pictures of lungs of people who smoke for a long time and they look black, that's because a lot of that particulate stuff has not been able to get removed from the lung and are kind of bedded in cells and parts of the lung.
Exactly. And one of the things that may surprise folks about e-cigarettes is that the particulate matter coming out of an e-cigarette into the smoker's lungs and exhaled out of the smoker or the vapor has even more fine and ultrafine particles than a traditional cigarette, which is, you know, it's a little bit counterintuitive because you're not doing combustion, you're not burning, you're heating. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it's an atomizer that is designed to create an aerosol, which is particulates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I do know that aerosols are used in treating asthma because you make the particle size small enough to bypass the upper airway.
Yeah.
So they can go down in the lungs to treat asthma and emphysema.
That's a very good point. It's similar to an inhaler, yeah.
All right, Keaton, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Kind of answered part of my question, I guess, with the particulate matter, but I was more wondering specifically in relation to secondhand smoke of marijuana, if you have any information on that.
Right. Well, let's see what our guests have to say.
That's a really good question. Of course, until recently, it's been an illegal product in all states. Now that we have a couple of states that have a legal product, we're starting to get a little bit more data, a little more studies coming out of it. But in terms of people reporting their use and therefore being able to study them and their exposure, it's been a little difficult. What we do know is that the particulate matter coming off of marijuana smoke, when you smoke marijuana or the secondhand smoke of marijuana, is the particulates are much higher than in a traditional cigarette. Know that for sure.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't, I didn't look into this before the program, but, and I don't smoke marijuana, so, and I don't really, I think the idea has got some problems, but let me just say that is to clear out the biases. But my concern is, my understanding is, you know, these products we have another issue of what's in them. And so there are lots of things that are getting into the particulate air that people are inhaling. And it just raises this whole question about what's going into your lungs, irregardless of the effects it may have on your ability to think and drive a car or whatever else you're doing. And I understand that there may be medicinal benefits. It's always a matter of risk and benefit, and certainly there are increasing numbers of poisonings associated with marijuana in the states where these things have been legalized. But we don't know as much, as you said, about the long-term harmful effects of inhaling these products.
And the other thing about marijuana is the way people use it. Traditionally, they don't chain smoke marijuana you would a cigarette. So the length of time that you're exposing yourself or exposing others is different. I think that's changing in the states of Colorado and Washington. That's what I'm hearing from my colleagues there, is that it is changing, and that is very scary in terms of the level of particulates that people will be taking into their lungs. And we don't advocate for anybody incinerating anything into their lungs.
Right. Yeah, there are actually laws to regulate people who work in places where there are a lot of stuff that's in the air, coal mines, asbestos factory places, and it is a potentially, anytime you got something that's aerosolized into the air that can get into your lungs, it has some potential risk.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and that's why we focus on workplaces with policy around secondhand smoke, is we focus on the workers' health, because they're the ones who are there for 8 hours a day being exposed hour after hour to a concentration of secondhand smoke.
Another thing that I've seen over time, most pediatricians recognize that more respiratory illness, including upper respiratory infection, problems like ear complications like ear infections and asthma, have dramatically decreased, partly maybe because of some of the immunizations we're using, which control those infections. But there's pretty good studies, like you alluded to, Emily, that where some efforts have been made to ban secondhand smoke, there's been decreases in asthma hospitalizations as well as other problems that you've mentioned.
We have seen really stunning results. We, as organizations, get into this business because of the need to protect the workers' health in the workplace. Everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air, and nobody should have to suffer the potentially fatal effects of toxins like this in the workplace. So that's one piece. The other piece is that we have seen some major shifts in our understanding as we're doing education around workplaces. We know that most Alaskans, even smokers, don't smoke in their own homes. We know that from the state's own surveys on that. We've seen that those shifting attitudes and a lot more emphasis and recognition on the part of people that are using these products to try and keep them from harming anyone else. Now, before we go any further in the program, I feel sort of obliged. We're talking about all these dangers of smoking and secondhand smoke. Feel like we ought to throw out the quit line number here.
Okay.
The state of Alaska does provide a tobacco quit line to all state residents. You can call. The number is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. You can call and get coaching and set up a quit plan and even get nicotine replacement therapy, so gum or patches or lozenges, mailed to you. And be able to call back in and get more support. Even they'll even reach out to you, follow through on a quit plan. Reaching out for some kind of help like this greatly increases one's chances of being able to stay quit.
When we talk about the health effects, we haven't really talked about, you mentioned the word psychoactive briefly. Should we talk about what we know about why people may start smoking and why they may continue smoking?
That might be a whole nother show.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, clearly we know that the tobacco industry marketing machine is the biggest factor in driving young people to start smoking, and that most people start smoking as young people. 99% by age 24, 90% by age 18. Most people start when they're young and don't fear the risks.
And also starting to use tobacco products as a teenager, that brain, as you know, is not fully developed, and it actually can change the pattern of brain development. It's youth, young people, teenagers become addicted much more quickly than adult would. Another reason why you don't see a lot of adults taking up smoking. And changes those neural pathways as they're being developed.
Mm-hmm. But then, yes, nicotine is one of the most addictive substances out there, and is oftentimes the last addiction that someone who may have multiple addictions can kick.
So I come from a family where my mom and dad both smoked, and I have two brothers, none of which I've smoked, so I've never quite understood it. I wasn't around my parents during about the time the Second World War was involved and going, and there was a lot of push to be on and a lot of peer pressure, I guess. But also nicotine, as I read it, is a calming. Again, I've never used cigarettes or pipe smoke or cigars, but it does apparently calm people down, relaxes them. That's why it may also have an effect on eating, because eating is often increased when you're stressed. Is another approach to how we handle stress and anxiety and so forth. So is that a big part of how people get involved in cigarettes in the first place, because you get that beneficial effect of calming you down?
I think so. I think it's a combination of raising you up and calming you down at the same time is sort of a counterintuitive, magical effect of nicotine that does both in terms of raising up your mood but calming you at the same time.
So this is an important issue as we move on, perhaps in the second part of the show, to talk a little bit more about e-cigarettes, which are primarily just nicotine. We have all of these issues related to nicotine, but we don't have all the other issues related to all the other chemicals related in cigarette smoke. That's one big principal difference.
We have different ones.
Different kinds of issues.
Different chemicals.
Different chemicals. Okay.
But you're right. It, you know, the intent of e-cigarettes was to create something that is less harmful.
And it turns out it's not actually less harmful than to be than the combusted cigarette with its over 7,000 chemicals.
All right. So maybe that's a good place to leave it. We'll take our little break and we'll come back and begin to talk a little bit more about e-cigarettes. However, we'll be more than happy to address questions about secondhand smoke and e-cigarettes as well. Let me remind listeners, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433. The toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll rejoin my guests, Emily Ninon and Marge Stoneking. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Our discussion today features Marge Stoneking, the director of the American Lung Association for Alaska, and Emily Ninon, who is director of the she's the government relations director, for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. We discussed the health effects of secondhand smoke in the first part of the program, and we're going to try to spend the rest of the program on e-cigarettes and what we know about the health effects of those guys on the second half. But you please feel free to call about any questions you have about what you're here today. You can email questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And I also promised myself one thing and somebody else another thing. So this is from something else, from somebody else who has been putting on a program called, in the past, the Alaska Coaches Clinic here in Anchorage. Now it's being called the Alaska Sports Health and Safety Clinic. It's probably the second, third year this has been going on. It's going to be April 12th and 13th at O'Malley's on the Green. If you want information about the times and get some ideas about what the program is all about, you can go to alaskacoachesclinic.com or call 250-6639. That's April 13th, April 12th and April 13th. Some of the topics are going to be sports injuries. What about early sports specialization versus multi-sports? Some information about concussions, trends in footwear, how to think about some bracing in sports and so forth. There's a number of experts from around the community that will be addressing your questions and very specific ones. And since we are going to talk about, we've been talking about smoking here, there have been now several studies that are long-term with multiple people involved, high numbers of people, which increases the likelihood of the information being found as being real, that keep coming back to basics. And this is a study I've been waiting to kind of mention just briefly. This seems like a reasonable place. So this is 2,235 men watched over a 35-year period of time, and they looked at five behaviors: how much exercise these guys did, whether they smoked or they didn't, what their body weight was, what they were eating, and the amount of alcohol. So exercise, smoking, body weight, healthy diet, and low alcohol intake over 35 years. If the men who followed four of five healthy behaviors, that is regular exercise, didn't smoke, kept their body weight down, ate a healthy diet, and had low alcohol intake, they had 70% fewer incidences of diabetes, heart disease, stroke compared to those who followed none of those. Most importantly, to people at my age, 60% decline in dementia and cognitive decline, with the single most important positive effect being seen from exercise. All right, so we're back to this program. We had an email just before we went off the air that again addresses the question of secondhand marijuana exposure. This is a family who lives in a multifamily housing, and they feel like they're exposed sometimes to marijuana smoke or in the air. What's their risk? What can be done about minimizing marijuana smoke or cigarette smoke in the air?
Well, we were looking a lot actually at multi-unit housing because we know in the last decade or so, we know for certain that you can't filter away the pollutants in secondhand smoke. You can't ventilate away the pollutants in secondhand smoke. That the only way to prevent exposure and harm is by eliminating smoking indoors altogether. And that goes not only for workplaces, but for multi-unit housing. So one unit can go into another unit very easily. So it depends on if it's a privately or a publicly owned facility, what your recourse is. But I would encourage folks to call 1-800-LUNG-USA and talk to the folks at the Lung Association about their specific situation. And again, there hasn't been nearly as much study done on secondhand marijuana smoke as there has on secondhand cigarette smoke, but certainly we know that the way it travels through a building is the same.
And we are going to talk before we get off the program today about some legislative efforts that both these organizations are doing in Alaska to help increase the likelihood we're going to have better and better air to breathe. Let's go ahead and take another phone call. This one is going to lead us very well into the next program, or the next part of the program. Roger, you're on line one.
Hey, thank you for talking to me. Hey, when I was young in the 40s and 50s, my dad used to buy nicotine. Liquid nicotine. It's a consistency of warm honey and black like tar. And he used it to spray the garden vegetables with. It was very, very potent, and it killed all the bugs. So it just, you know, to stress how potent that nicotine is.
Yep.
A very highly controlled substance when it's in the liquid form.
I think your question is going to lead us right into some of the very important information everybody needs to understand about e-cigarettes. So I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, to take your answer off the air because we're going to address that right now. And if we don't specifically seem to be getting to where you want to go, I want you to call me back, okay?
Yeah. You have a good day.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right, so e-cigarettes are basically, as I understand it, and I don't smoke these guys either. I've never seen one. I'm just doing what I'm reading, but they are basically nicotine, and they may have a flavoring agent, chocolate, bubble gum, all kinds of things I've heard, and maybe some propylene glycol. So they're not a big mixture of lots of necessarily different chemicals, in my understanding, but Roger's call wanted to know about nicotine in particular. So let's concentrate on nicotine for a second and try to answer his questions about potency, danger, just sticking with what we know about nicotine.
Well, Roger brings up a good point. In this country, we've known for many years that nicotine can be a very effective pesticide. And I've heard gardeners and greenhouses talk about that. It can be a pesticide as well as an herbicide. I remember talking to a greenhouse owner a few years ago who was concerned about residual nicotine on workers' hands and handling delicate plants. So nicotine has its own issues as a toxin. But when you talk about what's actually in an e-cigarette, that's a very difficult question to answer because there are over 250 different types of e-cigarettes on the market, in the U.S. right now, and they're not regulated. So there's no way to know, even from unit to unit of an individual product, what's in them. There have been studies done looking at this, and some of the e-cigarettes have been found to contain only propylene glycol and nicotine and flavoring, and other studies have found that that aerosol contained heavy metals, volatile organic compounds, and tobacco-specific nitrosamines, other harmful ingredients and carcinogens.
All right. So what I'm hearing from that is because this is an uncontrolled product, a lot like vitamins and minerals and supplements in this country, which are unlicensed, when they're really looked at, you don't know for sure until somebody looks at them what's in there. And even within the same product, in the same package even, because of control issues at the manufacturer, there are a lot of differences.
Yeah, I think what we know for sure is that none of them create harmless water vapor. Hmm. They all have something harmful in them. And in fact, we talked about marijuana earlier. You can't tell by looking at an e-cigarette whether it has nicotine as its psychoactive agent or THC derived mm-hmm. from marijuana, mm-hmm. or in some cases, heroin. Mm-hmm. So this is a drug delivery device mm-hmm. that can be used to deliver many different kinds of drugs, although it's being mass marketed mm-hmm. for nicotine.
Mm-hmm. I'm still real interested in Roger's phone call about the nicotine, because as I researched this, it became very clear that nicotine is a highly dangerous chemical. Maybe, you know, and it is true that the toxicity of anything can be made pretty significant. You can drink so much water, I can make you sick. People are surprised by that, but it's very true. So that in general with toxicology, we can say anything will make you pretty sick. But this is a chemical that can be absorbed through your skin. It can be absorbed with smoke, and it's also being produced in products that are sitting around that smell good and look good, and there's an increasing a number of poisonings associated with children with this, and it's potentially lethal in high enough concentration to be taken. So this is a fairly significant chemical, it seems to me, and that's what I think Roger was implying.
It is. It's a neurotoxin.
Okay.
And you're right, it can be absorbed through contact. So if you have a leaking mm-hmm. e-cigarette, for instance, it can have a health effect on you or your children or anyone who mm-hmm. comes into contact with it. Certainly you're hearing more and more in the news about children getting a hold of the liquid that goes into these, because they're sold in all different sorts of little containers without childproof caps, and they come in candy flavors, of kids getting into them and drinking them. And I don't know that we've lost any lives yet, mm-hmm. but we've had a lot of kids poisoned, and it's increasing by the day. Mm-hmm. Let alone the kids who are using them, because they're not regulated as a tobacco product.
So
any age can buy them.
Yeah. So, again, my understanding is the use of e-cigarettes is definitely increasing in the United States.
Yes, so we actually have seen a quite shocking increase in youth use of electronic cigarettes. Just from 2011 to 2012, the percentage of high school students using these across the country doubled. So it went from just under 5% up to 10% of high school students, and that's now 2 years old. We know that the adult rates have also increased, and the marketing sales of these products has also really, really shot up in the last couple of years.
Younger people using them more than older? What's the epidemiology of the use of these things?
That's a great mm-hmm. question. We don't actually have quite as much national data because it's a newer product, and even on surveys, they haven't made it on or just making it on to health surveys that are done so that we can learn more about how they're being used. We've seen some initial studies looking at people trying to use them as a tobacco cessation device. We do caution against that because they're not approved cessation devices and they're not regulated products. So again, you're looking at what are you actually getting in the electronic cigarette.
And there are 7 approved nicotine replacement products out there that are approved and studied and safe for people to use in cessation as they wean themselves off nicotine.
Which raises a really interesting issue. I had somebody tell me the other day is nicotine in cigarettes should be relatively safe since we market nicotine-containing products for smoking cessation, gums, other products.
So when you're looking at the nicotine replacement therapies, so your patches and your gum and your lozenges,
right.
There are you can know from the packaging because the Food and Drug Administration is regulating this exactly how much nicotine you're getting.
Right.
Then there's product quality standards from item to item.
Okay, so those are
nicotine still remains toxic, but when you're looking at trying to get off of using tobacco products, it is a way, has been shown to be effective in helping people wean themselves off of the nicotine addiction. The concern when you get into electronic cigarettes is you don't have any way of knowing exactly how much nicotine you're getting. You don't know what other things you're getting. It's gotten to be very popular, and there's been a lot of marketing around using it as a cessation device. But until there is an electronic cigarette that's actually approved by the Food and Drug Administration as a cessation device, we just don't have that kind of quality control and know exactly what you're getting.
So basically, what you're not saying, I want to make sure people hear, to be FDA approved and to be marketed for any purpose, there has to be shown to the FDA and independent research that it's safe and effective. It has to work, and the relative safety is better than not doing it, so to speak. So that, in an unregulated product, we don't know. So we can't say for sure that electronic cigarettes are as effective or safer than other nicotine-containing products at this time because no one's shown that they're safe and effective.
Right, and so anecdotally, there are probably people out there who have used these to quit smoking. Mm-hmm. Have they then quit them?
Right.
We don't know. We don't have those long-term success stories, so both the success factor effectiveness as well as safety, and maybe it will evolve to get there, but we haven't seen that yet because the approved nicotine therapy replacement therapy devices or products are step-down therapy. So you combine them with counseling and support, and you're stepping down your nicotine level in a therapeutic manner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference between
so
those
there are
two.
Some differences.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're maybe going to get a question about this. Joe, you're on line one. Tell us your story.
Okay, here we are.
What can we do for you?
Well, I wanted to tell you a little story. What gave me the willpower to quit after 40-some-odd years. And I came as a young man in Alaska at 26, a non-smoker. Guess what? Didn't take very long, and I became a smoker. And so as the years went on, my wife also smoked, and et cetera, et cetera. And I had the flu in the summertime. And so but usually I kept on smoking. And what happened is every year, of course, the price of cigarettes went up. And what did the politicians doing? What were doing it for the kids while they were lying through the teeth to just get some money. And so just as I was laying there, here on the radio comes, the city had just raised the buck, the state raised the buck, and their pets went far behind. I says, from now on, you guys will never, ever get another penny out of this guy. And that gave me the strength, my friend.
Okay.
That's how I quit.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Yep. It was not easy. It was not easy.
Not at all.
But it can.
You got to have some, and my wife tried the patches and counseling and all this. Guess what? She gets off for a while, back on. The only thing that got her off now, she had a stroke, and she can't get the cigarettes.
But, all right.
It's a tough one.
Well, sorry to hear Sorry to hear about your wife, but congratulations. And I think the evidence is pretty good. As soon as you stop, your risks for some of the complications start decreasing pretty quickly.
Was within 6 months after the open heart surgery, I said I quit smoking. Uh-huh. But it had nothing to do with it. On the other hand, having said all that, I don't believe if a business owner like a bar wants to have smoking in their establishment, they should have the right to do so. Have a big sign out there, please do not enter. This is a smoking establishment.
Thanks for your call, Joe.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Have a good day. Any comments? I have another email, unless you guys want to say something about Joe's comments.
I can't leave the last one alone. So workplaces, people should have an expectation of having a safe working environment. And this is efforts to get smoking out of the workplace are not efforts to end smoking. They're simply a matter of moving the smoking outside to a place where it's not harming others.
Here is an email, and you guys are probably going to say you don't know the answer to this one, and so I will try to answer it as best I can. My niece, age 27, was recently diagnosed with lupus. Lupus is an autoimmune disease that affects your lungs and skin and various organs of your body. Both her parents smoked heavily indoors when she was growing up. Any correlation between secondhand smoke and autoimmune disorders?
I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know either, and I've not seen any. It does give me a opportunity to talk about something a little bit more sophisticated that I think is worth mentioning, and that is that autoimmune disorders are increasing. Cigarette smoking is an exposure is decreasing, at least I think somewhat. But that doesn't mean the two cannot be correlated because sometimes there's a delay onset. But even more interesting is there is very clear evidence that environmental factors such as smoke, but even food and other things, do affect our immune system. They do affect directly our genetics. Our DNA does not change per se based on environment. But all of our DNA is turned on and off to make and do things at various times. And some of those signals come from environmental exposures. And we know kids who are born to mothers who smoke have smaller airways in their lung. And it's probably not directly related to exposure to that cigarette smoke because it happens. It's present at birth, so that there are ways, as I'm saying, that the environment can affect our immune system and can lead to chronic autoimmune disorders. I am not saying that cigarette smoke causes lupus. I'm just saying the mechanism by which these things can happen are beginning to be understood, and perhaps at some times we'll understand this question better. But at this time, I'm going to say I've never heard any association between the two, and I'm only using this to help people understand that we're really getting into some very, very sophisticated and very complex issues with the environment and our genetic system and what it does.
I think we can, we do know conclusively that those with a compromised immune system are more affected by secondhand smoke and any other air pollutant. So we talk about pregnant women, we talk about because they're growing lungs within them, children whose lungs are still developing, the elderly whose lungs have less capacity and their immune systems are weaker, as well as people with heart disease or asthma or lung disease. Any kind of compromised immunity or other health risks raises your risk when you're exposed to secondhand smoke or other air pollutants.
So I'll just comment that the disease processes are complex. What's not complex is reducing exposure to secondhand smoke. That's actually fairly simple to accomplish. So just moving the smoking activity outside greatly reduces exposure to secondhand smoke, and you can just eliminate one of those major risk factors for a number of disease processes right there.
And so here in Alaska, we know through one of your surveys at the American Cancer Society that half the people in the state think we already have a smoke-free workplace law, and yet we don't.
And we're working to change that. We have legislation in both the House and the Senate moving through the Alaska State Legislature right now that would address this issue and require all workplaces to be smoke-free.
So half of Alaskans currently aren't protected from secondhand smoke at work by law. Places like Anchorage, Juneau, and Palmer, and a number of other smaller communities do have local laws protecting folks from secondhand smoke at work, but the statewide law would then make the whole state equal in terms of protections and put all businesses on the same level playing field.
If people wanted to learn more about this legislative effort, how would we help them learn more? I don't think I have a link on our program. Is there a number or an email for you, Emily?
There is. So you can contact us through the campaign website, which is smokefreealaska.com, and find out more information, find out ways to contact us, and ways to contact your legislators as well, and support adding these protections for the rest of the state that doesn't have the coverage. It's kind of interesting history. Bethel was actually the first place in Alaska to enact smoke-free workplaces back in 1998. And a number of other places have followed suit. Marge mentioned Anchorage and Juneau, Barrow, Dillingham, Haines, Kluwak, Nome, Palmer, Petersburg, Skagway, Unalaska. So we have about half the state covered, half the state's population covered by law right now, and working to get the other half covered.
What about e-cigarettes? I know that in my research that some cities, as my understanding, have tried to control the use of e-cigarettes, and I'm not sure whether that's in workplaces or exactly where. Can we comment on what's being done there?
Sure. So in a number of, we're just starting to see now where over 100 communities, cities nationwide have gone in and actively included electronic cigarettes in their smoke-free laws. The more recent laws that have passed here in Alaska do include electronic cigarettes. Back in 2006, when the Anchorage law was written, electronic cigarettes weren't on the market. So they were not specifically included, and we're starting to see them used in indoor facilities. Quite concerning, because there's a lot of misinformation out there about them, and about what's actually coming off that aerosol that they emit. So we're very interested in protecting people from these unknown chemicals and electronic cigarettes in the workplace and public places as well.
We're getting close to the end of the program. We've got a little bit longer than I normally would like, but I think there's a number of particular issues we want to make sure people have heard about here today. So can I ask each of you to maybe comment on what you think are the most important bits of information that we want listeners to take away? And then I've got one that if you guys don't, since I'm a pediatrician, I'm going to make sure people take away.
Sure. So the most important thing you can do to maintain healthy air around you in an indoor environment is to stay away from secondhand smoke and not to smoke. And if you do smoke, quit as soon as possible. Everyone deserves the right to breathe smoke-free air.
Emily?
And I would echo Marge's comment. Everyone does have the right to breathe smoke-free air. That's something we can all agree on. And there's easy ways to handle this by just taking that smoking outside. And if you're ready to quit, there are resources available. Both the American Cancer Society and the American Lung Association, as well as our other partners, the American Heart Association, AARP, the Alaska Native Health Board. We've all fought for many years now to get the tobacco prevention program up and running in the state and fund that tobacco quit line. So take advantage of it. That's 1-800-QUIT-NOW, and help us with our campaign to protect all workers from secondhand smoke in the workplace.
What about e-cigarettes? I'm gonna say that, and you guys can edit me, that I think We need to all keep an open mind, but at this point we don't have lots of long-term evidence. We know that there are lots of variabilities in what's coming out of these cigarettes. And in particular, I want to make sure people are aware, particularly children, people who are using these and may have kids around, that the concentrated solutions that are put in these cartridges can potentially be life-threatening ingestions to children. They're that dangerous, and they smell good, they look good, and I don't know how well they're protected from children opening them and drinking them or even getting them on their skin.
And you mentioned before the show the precautionary principle, so we don't know a ton about the long-term effects of secondhand aerosol. But we do know what's in it. We do know that it's risk for lung cancer. And certainly we know that the nicotine itself is harmful. I think the other scary thing about these products is they look like all different kinds of things. They're called all different kinds of things. Some of them look like a thumb drive for your computer or a pen. And they're called hookah pens or e-pens. And they're packaged to look like a toy, kind of.
And you pointed out one final thing that comes to mind is that although they are often marketed or it's thought that they may help, let me put it this way, in nicotine dependence, we don't know that for a fact. And in fact, the way they're used is much different than the way products that are licensed for that have been shown to be safe and effective, in particular by decreasing the dose over time.
Yes.
All right. I want to say thanks very much to both of you for taking the time to be here. It's been helpful to me and been interesting to look into this particular problem, particularly the e-cigarettes. I kind of understood the secondhand smoke issue. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Woodard.
Thank you.
If you'd like to continue this conversation on the health effects of secondhand smoke and e-cigarettes, you can join KSKA on Facebook, and you can find that link on our website, www.alaskapublic.org, and you can also find our Line 1 archives there. You can listen to this program at any time you'd like, or you can refer others that you would like to hear the program to the Line 1 archives at alaskapublic.org. Next week, we're going to be discussing some of the newest prostate cancer screening recommendations. These are leading, like mammography recommendations, to some confusion and an uncertainty. And on the next program, we're going to try to clarify the recommendations and the reasoning behind them with Anchorage urologic oncologist Dr. Josh Logan. So why not tune into your health and learn more next Monday, April 7th at 2 p.m., repeating that same evening at 9 p.m. on FM 91.1 KSKA. Also, I should point out Pat Yak is our chief content officer here at Alaska Public Media. Monica Gokey is our web editor and helped us audio engineer today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.